Welcome to The Flute and I. Join me, Aisling Agnew, as we explore the unique world of the flute in Northern Ireland. World-renowned players, teachers and makers from a wide variety of musical backgrounds share their experiences and expertise. This episode features a very talented Northern Irish flautist, currently based in Germany, Gareth Houston.
I was actually trying to work out, have we met before?
I don't think so. I did go to see you play a gig once, I think. I was trying to remember this, in the duo, the guitar duo.
Oh, yeah?
I think he's came to Royal Welsh once when I was there, or Cardiff at least. Either that or I was visiting Glasgow for something.
Uh-huh.
But I'd definitely seen you play before, but we didn't meet formally, no.
When you say guitar duo, you make it sound like I'm also a virtuoso guitarist.
And you're not.
No, not really. But tell me what you've been up to.
Recently or in general?
In general, because I know you studied in Wales. That's obviously why you were there.
Yeah, did my bachelor degree at Royal Welsh. That was nearly 10 years ago now, yeah. I'm 29 now, so 11 years ago I went to Royal Welsh. Did 4 years there, went to 3 years at the École Normale de Musique in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I live in Cologne. In Germany, I went to study with Robert Wynn there.
Excellent.
So I've been doing that. And then now I'm doing the whole thing. Freelancing, auditions for orchestras, preparing for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I can get my hands on, really.
That's brilliant. So, yeah. So why did you choose the Royal Welsh to go to when you were 17, 18?
I wish I could give you like a romantic answer to that, but the year I was applying for university was the last year of the lower fees. So if I waited a year to take a gap year, the fees would have been up to $9,000. Mm-hmm. And it was the only place I got an offer for.
Excellent.
They gave me a scholarship and I just didn't want to say no to it.
Yeah, of course.
I really felt like I should have took a gap year and worked on my technique because I had a lot of gaps in my playing, but I wasn't going to do it at the expense of like $30,000.
Yeah.
I'd actually applied to do psychology instead. I was going to give up on the flute, and at the last minute, Royal Welsh came in and gave me that offer. It was with a guy called Roger Armstrong, who played with the BBC Wales.
Uh-huh.
But he was born here. Born in Ballyclare, and he lived out. He was like seven, and he went to Australia. Played with the West Australian Symphony Orchestra and then moved over to BBC Wales. Uh-huh. And I think the accent and the charm of being a Northern Irish person, and my playing wasn't great, but there was a lot of, it was very Northern Irish fruit band, I think, a lot of the playing, and he felt a certain connection with that, and he saw that if I worked hard on my technique, I could maybe get something out of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went for that reason.
Yeah, brilliant. And you studied with Colin before that, am I right?
Briefly, yeah. About 6 months I studied. So I started with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was about 14, I thought, I'm going to try playing the flute. You know, take it a bit more seriously, maybe consider it as a career. Went to Colin for about 6-7 months. Loved it. But to be totally honest, I just don't think I was ready for that level of dedication at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was 15, I was starting to discover girls and beer, and the amount of practice needed with Colin was just not enough. So I quit. I kind of regret it. So I quit the flute for about a year at that time. And then I thought, if I'm going to apply for music college, and you get back into it. So I went to Glenn, my uncle,
mm-hmm.
for about a year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I only had Colin for about 6-7 months. And then Glenn, and then off to music college.
So obviously you're part of a very musical family in the flute scene.
To an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, like my grandfather, like obviously my cousins Ross and Jake all play and stuff, but they're younger than I am.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up, it was just my grandfather and Glenn, my uncle.
All right.
And it was all flute bands.
Yeah.
So my grandfather, I think I played in Cahard band first. He conducted them, and then I went to Kelswater, Ballyclare Victoria, played a bit with Rose Linnens and other bands like that around Lisburn.
Mm-hmm.
And then Glenn, he came back from London and he was doing a lot of things, so I went to study with him for a while. But at that time, it was just my grandfather and Glenn. Ross mm-hmm. and Jake were too young to really be about at that time.
Yeah.
So we didn't have that thing of the Houston flute thing yet. That was more after I went.
Later, yeah. And so how did you find Wales when you were there?
Loved it, to be totally honest. I just love studying in the music college. I was amazed by, getting to study classical music all day, every day. It was amazing for me. I always wanted to do that. And I never appreciated you could do that away from it sounds bad, but away from flute bands, just to study the flute in a different context was so much fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I really had a great 4 years there. Don't think I made a huge amount of progress, to be totally honest, in my flute playing. I maybe spent too much time having too much fun with the degree and the course in general. I loved every aspect of it. I did every module I could, and I was just, and I don't think I spent enough time seriously looking at my technique, which was a bit of a problem, but I loved it. I really enjoyed my time there. I stayed with Roger Armstrong, my teacher. I stayed with him for the whole 4 years.
Yeah.
I just loved studying with him. I had Eva Stewart on piccolo. It was great. I just loved the lessons. I loved being, Cardiff being a small city, you could go watch WNO and BBC Wales all the time. They were always very handy. You go to rehearsals.
Yeah.
It just felt there was a lot going on in Cardiff at the time. It was a lot of fun. I really loved it.
Yeah.
I'm very glad I went there in the end, as opposed to maybe going to London, where I think it would have been a bit much for me at 18.
Yeah.
It was perfect for me. Cardiff, I loved it. I miss it still.
And do you feel like that part of your life was about expanding your musical horizons then?
Oh, I very much so. Like, I was flute band through and through up until then. Like, although I always had a massive interest in classical music, but there wasn't really anywhere to develop it or go with it. Like, my mum and dad aren't musical at all in the slightest. I didn't do like Ulster Youth Orchestra or any of that kind of stuff. You know, I wasn't in those circles as a kid, so I never really got to explore classical music really outside of flute bands. That was it. Just, and then in flute bands, it was mainly just, you know, Von Suppé and Rossini and all the overtures and that kind of stuff, which I still love, but I never got to explore Beethoven or Mozart or any of that kind of stuff. So going to music college and suddenly doing this music, that was what it was for me. I just wanted to take it all in. Contemporary music was a big part of that as well. I loved working with composers when I was there. Just, I didn't know that existed. And then suddenly there's people like, you can study composition. And you went and played with them. It was brilliant crack. Yeah. So yeah, that was what I mainly did. I think whilst college was just exploring everything. Going to as many concerts as I could because it was super cheap. And like, I went to watch all the different classes. You can go watch like the clarinet class or the violin class. Just go to anything. Everything, performance classes, just getting stuck in.
Yeah.
Didn't practice that much, as I said, but yeah, I went and listened to everything.
Yeah, that's all part of becoming a better musician, isn't it?
I think so. I enjoyed it. Like, at the time, I didn't really think much about it. It was just, I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
There was a real novelty to it, of being in a new city and studying classical music all the time. It went from being a hobby to something I was doing all the time.
Yeah.
And I never got over that. I just loved it. And at the time, Royal Welsh had got the brand new building. So it's a beautiful building. And you were always a bit starstruck going into it because it was so good. It looked like a spaceship. It was class. And you went in and that, yeah, just every day going in there and studying with people who had like played in this orchestra and that orchestra and talking about their experience with this conductor. And it was just like, wow, I can't get enough of this.
Yeah.
Loved it. I was very starry-eyed for 4 years.
And you were telling me before about the thesis that you did. Was that at Wales?
That was at Royal Welsh. Yeah. So I did my bachelor thesis on flute bands. Yeah. Or the flute band tradition of Northern Ireland is the way I worded it, I think. Again, Roger had a big part in that because he had known a little bit about flute bands, being from Ballyclare, and the more he got to know about it through me, because I used to fly back every year for the contest as well, so the more he got to know about it, he was like, is there literature in this? And then there wasn't really, and he was just like, I think you should write your thesis on it. Start making something of it, start interviewing people. I know a lot of people, and my granddad's conducted all the bands, so I know so many people. So yeah, I just did that. I really enjoyed it. As I said earlier, I think I ended up with way too much information, and what I ended up writing felt like an introduction to flute bands or a beginner's guide to flute bands, which is not what I was intending. I had these really massive ideas of like comparing it to the French flute school and yeah, as I said, things about linguistics and accents and how the vibrato might be linked to the Northern Irish accent, all these crazy paths I went down, and most of them ended up in dead ends, so I just didn't follow through on them and ended up just putting something together that it worked. I got a very good grade in it, but I sort of felt like that was unfinished.
Yeah.
A bit of a shame.
To be continued.
Maybe one day. Maybe.
Took you to Paris apart from going to study at the, you know, Centre of Flute Playing?
Oh, Paris. I didn't want to stay in the UK for my master's. I knew that. The fees were very high and that put me off straight away, and I was kind of done with the UK. I was looking at the Nordic countries mainly because I thought I can't speak other languages, so that rules out most of the countries in Europe. And then my ex-girlfriend at the time was French, and I went to spend a couple of weeks in Paris with her, and I thought, while I'm there, I'll just, you know, get a few flute lessons and there's so many players there. And I went to get one with Catherine Cantan, who was the principal flute at the opera at the time. And I was telling her, like, you know, I'm thinking of doing a master's somewhere. And she was like, I've got a space in my class if you want to come and study here. And that was it. A couple of weeks later, I was away to Paris.
Brilliant.
It happened very quickly. I had to learn French very quickly and just do it. But I just thought, why not?
Yeah.
And as you said, like, it is Paris for flute players, like Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, yeah, the chance to study with principal flute at Paris Opera, you're not saying no to that.
Yeah.
So I just went. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
So was it quite intensive that year?
Oh, yeah. The French was tough, like learning the French, because I studied purely in French.
Okay.
So that was hard. And the big thing, I think, was the class system they have. So when you go to play your flute lesson, the whole class watches.
Yeah.
And you're always open, and it's very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the level of the class was very high.
Yeah.
And Catherine had just started teaching that year at the Academy of Mile where I went, before she had taken over the class of Pierre-Yves Artaud.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of his students were coming from there, and they were very good. And I think, I got a real sense of, like, wow. Even in Cardiff, more in Belfast, but Cardiff especially, big fish, small pond, going to Paris really was a wake-up call of what I needed to do in my flute plan. Really needed to sort it out. So it was a lot of work, but really interesting. The French as well. Learning French very quickly was tough. But again, it was Paris. It was great. I was living in Paris. Yeah. What a great time.
And what else did you do apart from the studies? Like, were you soaking up all the concerts or the galleries? Were you involved in
everything? Everything. The new building, the Philharmonie, Philharmonie de Paris, just opened that year, the new concert building in Paris, and they had €8 student tickets for every gig.
Wow.
You had to buy them at the start of the year, so I used to save up like £100, and then in April you'd buy your tickets for the following season. Mm-hmm. But like, I was seeing the Berlin Phil, I saw the Chicago Symphony with Moody, I saw, I don't know, London Symphony so many times, Gergiev, loads of times, Yuja Wang, Lang Lang, all of them. Mm-hmm. I was £8 a pop. It was the same price as me getting a kebab with a tin of Fanta in my local shop.
Yeah.
It was the same price as that to go watch the Berlin Phil.
Yeah.
So I was doing all that, and Paris is full of culture.
Yeah.
So I soaked it up, and then the food, the wine, everything.
Everything.
I just fell for it. I love Paris.
It's amazing what you can do when the arts are funded properly.
Well, that's it, yeah. Very much so. Yeah, there was a big difference in that as well. I see it more now than I'm in Germany, but even in Paris, the importance of the arts and the respect that comes with saying you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt, I don't know if this has maybe changed now, but I always felt when I was younger in Northern Ireland, when you tell people you play the flute, it's sort of like, oh, but what's your real job, or what do you do on the side of that? While that is not the case in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
That is not, it's a respected profession to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain amount of weight that comes with it. Germany, even more so.
Yeah.
Saying you're an artist in Germany, you play in an orchestra in Germany, is kind of like saying, it's as normal a job as like a barman or a cleaner. Yeah. It's totally banal to them.
Yeah.
It's totally reasonable. And yeah, they do fund it big time.
Yeah.
Especially in Paris, if you're under 26 and from the European Union, all the museums are free. So the Louvre and stuff is all free. Mm-hmm. So you can go as many times as you want.
Yeah.
Everything's free, or at most it's €8. So I went to everything.
So were you there for that 1 year, or did you stay?
3 years.
Oh, 3 years.
3 years I did there, yeah. The way the French system works is you keep studying until you pass the exam.
Okay.
So if you don't pass, you keep going. So I did three different levels there, actually, when I was there.
Uh-huh.
The Academy of Mile had its own system, still does. So it doesn't have the bachelor master system. It has its own layer. Because it was kind of the alternative to the Conservatoire de Paris. The Academy of Mile, it was started by Alfred Cortot, and it was like the alternative school. So they kind of go against the grain with their systems and the way things work. So I studied there for 3 years, loved it. Studied with Catherine, as I said, but she was always very busy. And my flute lessons started in the second year. I started not really seeing her that often. Mm-hmm. She was very busy, and that annoyed me a bit, but I actually ended up getting very friendly with Magali Monnier, who is the principal flute of the radio orchestra there. And I think I took a couple of lessons off her. She wasn't teaching there at the time. She was teaching in Lyon, I think. And then I went to a summer course with her, and we started speaking English, which she loved. And then I started babysitting her kids in English, and she would give me flute lessons in exchange.
Nice.
So then that became a thing where I could get flute lessons regularly with her, and I have Catherine on the side. And then, yeah, it just worked really well. I just did everything I could in Paris. So for 3 years, I was studying with both them then.
Yeah.
And just doing what, and then playing in master classes or going to watch classes or getting lessons with whatever. There's so many famous flute players in Paris.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 3 years I did there.
So do you feel like your flute playing got to where you wanted it to be at that point?
Not quite. I think it got better, but I hate saying this because I love a lot of things about the flute band tradition, but there was no doubt I had a lot of bad habits.
Okay.
A lot of bad things, like, I even remember in my first class with Catherine, I played like middle E without the little finger on.
Mm-hmm.
And she was amazed that I got this far without knowing that you had to put it on. And I was amazed. And like top E flat and top D sharp, I was sometimes playing with just the left hand. And it was stupid things like that I just learned from flute band. So I never really took the time, even in Paris, to just sort my technique out. Mm-hmm. It was the reason why I kind of left Paris as well. I loved my lessons. Musically, I developed massively. My flute playing obviously got better, but it wasn't where I wanted it to be. I knew there was still some. There was a lot of things sorting me out or holding me back that I needed to sort out. So that's why I left Paris in the end, was because I was like 26 and I thought, if you're going to sort this out, it needs to be now. And everyone had told me the one man that can sort you out is Robert Gwynn.
Mm-hmm.
So I left Paris to go to Cologne to study with him,
mm-hmm.
because I thought, this is the chance. I need to go and fix some really basic issues in my technique.
Okay.
So that's why I left. But yeah, my flute playing got better. There's no doubts about that, but it wasn't quite where I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, is it ever quite where you want it to be? It's always a journey, isn't
but
it?
But that is the question. I always felt like there was things holding me back, right? I don't know. I can never give a gig without being totally stressed out or trying to control too many things. Or I always felt like if I was going to play well, it was dependent on this condition and this condition and this condition. And I could never just go out and play and accept that that's what it was.
Yeah.
There was a lot of mental issues with my performance. And yeah, I just knew I needed to take some real time to go and work on that.
Yeah.
So that's why I went to Cologne, just to sit and didn't do any gigs for like a year, year and a half. Didn't play anywhere. Didn't play for anyone else. Just went to Robert and practiced. I thought, this is the time where if I do it, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it.
And so was that private studies with him?
Yeah. I applied to go to the Hochschule in Köln, where he teaches the music college, before I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some private lessons with him ahead of the audition. And then I applied for like an orchestral center in Dortmund, and I got accepted there. But then Robert told me, you shouldn't really go. If you're not studying with me, you shouldn't go. He said he would recommend that he studies privately with him. Very unsure about what to do, but I don't regret it actually. So I went to study privately with him. And it was the best decision I'd ever had. It just taken a year to work on my flute playing, or a year and a half, to really just work on it with him was great.
Mm-hmm.
He is a genius when it comes to teaching the flute.
Okay.
He really is. So it worked very well for me.
Good. And how do you find living in Cologne?
Good. Yeah. It's not Paris.
Okay.
I miss Paris desperately, I really do. Germany and France are two very different countries.
Sure.
Two very different countries, and food's terrible in Germany. It is desperate. Yeah, there's certain aspects of German culture I love. Like, they're big into their football,
mm-hmm.
which I love. I get to go watch, like, third division football matches. I love that, you know, a pint and a cheap hot dog. That's mad. That's me.
Happiness.
Oh, that's my date. I'm an easy date. I'm a very cheap date. Lots of things of that in German culture, but I had to abandon the whole French wine, cheese, culture, sure. education, and go to Germany, which is very different. But it's got its charm.
But you've also got the added bonus of playing in a GAA club.
I do. Yeah, that came about quite weirdly. I went to play soccer with a few lads just because I wanted to make friends. And making friends with Germans is hard.
Okay.
A lot of people told me this, that they're very like, once you get a German as your friend, they are your mates. They're there. They're going to turn up on your moving house. They're dedicated. But to break into them is quite difficult.
Okay.
And the language barrier isn't a thing, because the Germans speak incredible English. It's just a cultural thing. They're very difficult to crack. So I'd never fell into the expat crowd when I was in Paris. I had loads of French friends, but this time I thought there was a soccer thing and it was all expats. So I thought, I'll go along and I'll play a bit of that. And then someone had said to me, do you want to go play GAA? We've got a club here. So I'm like, I'm a Protestant from Lisbon. I don't really know if I can go and play GAA at that point. And I really was like, I don't know. Like, they're called the Cologne Celtics. And I thought, like, I can't tell my granny I'm playing for the Cologne Celtics. But eventually I did. I just went on. I was like, oh, I'll give it a go. And I loved it. I'm actually the Irish language and cultural officer for the club now.
Wow.
Like, I'm starting to learn a wee bit of Irish. I'm getting there. But yeah, I'm involved with them. So that really helped. It helped me settle in Cologne a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making friends very easy. And it's one of the benefits of the GAA. No matter where you go in the world, there's a GAA club.
Yeah.
And if you say you're a GAA man, you will instantly get friends with them. You'll be welcomed in. It's a very big community, which I'd never known. So that was good.
Germany and get involved in a club, but probably if you'd stayed here the whole time, you might never have done that.
Oh god, a GAA club? No, I don't think there is one in Lisbon anyway, but no, I don't think I would have been brave enough to go to a GAA club. And I wouldn't have had the need to, because I would go to football matches here, and like, I would have been the kind of person that might have went to a Celtic match or something.
Mm-hmm.
That would be as far as away I would have went. Nowadays I'd love to go to Celtic. I'm totally I really don't care anymore, but No, I never would have joined a GAA club in Northern Ireland.
It feels like a bigger cultural leap here than it would in another part of Europe.
It's unthinkable, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like when I went to Wallace and GAA it didn't exist.
Yeah.
We weren't even allowed to play soccer in Wallace. Like it was rugby, cricket, hockey, that very British sports, and GAA was a million miles away.
Yeah, it's funny. And tell me about the different styles of music that you've got into, because I know your horizons have expanded and you're playing contemporary music. Mm. And do you play some traditional music as well as classical music? So what are you kind of most enthused about? Chamber music, orchestral music?
Oh, it's hard to say if I could pick one, because I always find when I just start playing something, I love it. 99% of the time, once I'm actually playing it and they understand that, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I do love everything. I think deep down, I really do love classical music. I really love, and I love orchestral playing, and chamber music I'm a massive fan of. Mm-hmm. Maybe in an ideal world, if I could pick one to do, it probably would be chamber music.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real joy with chamber music you don't get in orchestral music as much, but then the rep in orchestral music is brilliant. But yeah, I did a bit of trad music in Cardiff. I used to play the pubs and clubs there just with a mate of mine, Zach, who actually has ended up having a really popular trad band, True, here.
Mm-hmm.
And we started doing things in Cardiff together, and then I went to Paris and sort of took it with me a little bit, and then Cologne. I do where I can.
Yeah.
I'm not trained in trad music at all. Like, I wouldn't count myself as a trad musician.
Yeah.
Especially here, when you see the quality of musicians here, I wouldn't dream of calling myself a trad musician, but I play it. I enjoy it.
And do you play it on your classical flute?
I started to now. I used to play it on the Irish flute and the whistles.
Uh-huh.
And then Philippe Barnes, I'd listened to a lot of his records and like bought his book and stuff and just thought, yeah, okay, can sound good on it. I don't sound anything like him. Obviously, he's incredible. But yeah, I enjoy the challenge of playing it in the classical flute,
mm-hmm.
because it's really difficult, I find, to get the same kind of sound.
Yeah.
And the ornamentation and the articulation. But I enjoy the challenge of it.
Yeah. I find it harder on the classical flute sometimes. Yeah. Just the ornaments don't fall under your fingers.
Not at all.
You know, it's a bit awkward to get around things. Sometimes.
Yeah, like even when you're playing in keys like D major and
like
the F sharps, having to put my mind back to using middle finger F sharp and things like that, it's very difficult sometimes. But I love it. There's a lot of nerdiness to get into the nitty-gritty of the ornamentation, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
I get stuck into that. So, yeah, I love playing Irish music. When I get the chance, I definitely never say no to it.
And tell me about, you started getting interested in contemporary music. You were saying about when you were in Paris, wasn't it? And you were studying a sight reading class.
So Paris was the big place where I got it. Paris is a big tradition. And the Quarter Mile, where I studied, has a big tradition of contemporary music.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had a sight reading class, which is a very bizarre thing to me. I didn't know you could have sight reading classes. But it was basically like you went in the Monday morning and you'd be signed up with a couple of other musicians, whatever instruments. Sometimes you'd walk in and be like a viola and a guitar player or something. And the teacher would find some scores from somewhere and just put them up for you. And you play through them, and you would normally do a Baroque piece, a Romantic piece, and something contemporary. In the session, she'd give you tips on how to sight read it.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I was playing a piece by, as I said, the guy Eric Tungi. I played one of his pieces in the class, and I remember asking the teacher like about some kind of like some performance direction he put in it, and I didn't quite get what it meant. And I'd asked her, and she's like, "Oh, I'm not sure either." And she's like, "I'll go ask him." And it turned out he was teaching his composition class next door.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got to know him a bit, and then at the end of the year, our sight reading class used to join with his composition class to work with him. So we'd always like premiere their works and do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it. I loved working with composers. I love being part of that process,
mm-hmm.
especially when you're part of the process where they're actually composing the piece and it's not finished yet. And you get to have a bit of an input to it and understand it and influence it in certain ways. I love that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. I did some crazy stuff. And then the Accademia Mile being so international as a school, a lot of the composers draw on their own traditional music.
Okay.
So there's no Irish people there really. So, and not very many French people. So I mainly work with like a lot of Japanese composers.
Uh-huh.
So that let me try and understand their contemporary Japanese works. You have to go and listen to some normal traditional Japanese music. So then you get to explore that, which is loads of crack. And the same with like Iranian music. There's a lot of Iranian composers there.
Uh-huh.
So I got to go into that whole Middle Eastern music and start exploring that. And it was
tricky time signatures and things.
Oh, it's mad. Yeah. Some of the stuff and like the quarter tones and the weird. Oh, it's brilliant. I just love that kind of stuff. And as I was saying, there's no preconceptions when you go to play contemporary music. I totally relax on stage when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not because like the rep's difficult, don't get me wrong. But if I play a wrong note in contemporary music, I don't get as stressed out about it as if I do in Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I'm not stressed, I'm less likely to make mistakes anyway. I just play much better. I just find this freedom with contemporary music and I love it. Yeah, I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I love the weird and wonderful. And even if I don't like the pieces sometimes, I find it a personal challenge to go and try and like them.
For sure.
And sell them in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a real kick out of that. Yeah.
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 know, sometimes there's something to be gained in your own personal development, you know, even if you don't
like
that, you sort of have to challenge yourself to 100%. Find the thing, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. I found a lot out about myself as a musician when I was doing that. Mm-hmm. I think trad and contemporary gave me that. Trad music as well gave me that in a big way, because it was so nice. Like, I remember when I was doing my final recital at Royal Welsh, I was doing a lot of gigs with a trad band at the time, and it was so nice to get experience of being on stage and just not giving a shite. Mm-hmm. You know, if you played a wrong note, nobody cares in trad music. Nobody's ever came up to me after a trad gig and I was actually an A-flat and bar fit. No, that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You play a wrong note, everyone's drunk, it doesn't matter, it's a bit of crack. Mm-hmm. And just trying to remember that sensation and that feeling, bringing that into classical music, going, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're just playing the flute, nobody's going to die if you play
still
a wrong note.
Music.
And contemporary music gives me that same kind of vibe in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many things that we do to break the normal conventions of classical music. Even when you have to move on stage, or you have to speak, or...
Yeah.
Like, a lot of things we have to speak used to really freak me out in contemporary music. I was very nervous of doing that. Because it was just like, I nearly felt like I was cringing at myself by doing it. Like, I played a piece a few years ago, and I really did get a cringe off it. Like, Iranian composer. So she had wrote it, and it was the first time it was meant to be played. And at the very start of the piece, you have to speak a bit of Persian.
All right.
And it was just the idea of speaking Persian with, like, a Lisburn accent.
Yeah.
I just felt myself cringing at it, going like this. And she loved it. She was like, Persian with an Irish accent. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm like, that's, oh.
Yeah.
Lisburn accents don't go, I don't know, they don't go with much. I don't know if many people have spoke Persian with a Lisburn accent, but.
I don't know, it could be a first.
Yeah. I don't know, aesthetically, it was a bit bizarre. And I felt myself cringing at it, and then it, yeah. But then when you break it down, finally, and you get into it, that's it. Suddenly you feel so free.
Yeah.
Okay, I've done that. I've screamed 5 minutes ago. I can definitely play an F sharp now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's grand now. Like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
De-stress entirely. So I love that about it.
I know. It's funny, that thing that you have coming from Northern Ireland, you sometimes feel like, do we really belong in this? You know, it's nice when you have to just shake that off and go with it, you know, and that little bit of acceptance that you get from it.
Hugely. Yeah. Yeah, I had to deal with that quite a lot. Like the whole thing of, like, do you belong in that kind of place when you're just from Northern Ireland? And there is a good contemporary music scene here now, but certainly 10 years ago, I wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think that, like, I don't know, just being from Northern Ireland doing contemporary music by, like, people from all over the world, it felt a bit like, really, am I meant to be here?
Yeah.
Like he's Japanese, she's Iranian, he's from Paraguay, and you've got me. Like...
I know, we were talking about this the other day in Hard Rain Ensemble, because we had done a workshop with the Ulster Youth Orchestra, and that's always one of our most rewarding parts of the year. But you do see that a lot of students that are already playing at a really high level don't have any experience of playing contemporary music at all, and so must find it quite tricky if they go to college and are faced with extended techniques.
Mm.
And I often think about, you know, if they meet composition students at their level, they'll be writing for the flute in a way that the flute players won't have encountered yet, which I think is a real imbalance, you know. But, you know, a lot of conventional flute teachers aren't embracing that. So, you know, you can't magically integrate it into students' lives yet, you know. But it's great when it opens up for you at college. And so you have some, like, professional collaborations that you're doing at the minute with composers.
Starting to get into it, yeah. So as I said, a few years ago, I had a load of things planned. There's a new ensemble in Paris that I had started to talk to, because I knew a lot of the people there, Ensemble Dynamique. And then Corona happened and everything sort of collapsed, which was a real shame, because I was really looking forward to a lot of those gigs.
Yeah.
So things are starting up a little bit more slowly now. How often I go back to Paris, even though it's only a 3-hour train from Cologne, I'm super busy at the minute in Cologne with my own stuff, and getting back is quite difficult. But hopefully over the next few months, I will be doing a few more things with them.
Mm-hmm.
Going back and playing with that ensemble, and to work with one or two of the composers who I knew there, two especially who I became very good friends with.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one, as you're saying, like, studying, like, working with people you studied with is great fun, because you become friends with them. And then, like, as stupid as it sounds, the amount of times I've sat in a pub after, like, 6 pints, and then we'd be like, let's commission a flute piece.
Yeah.
And it happens. Like, sometimes it happens. Like, oh, yeah, let's write a flute concerto. And then suddenly, you know, it's not a concerto, but you'll get a piece for solo flute. And that's kind of the joy of being mates with these people.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a pint with them and work it out. And, yeah, it suddenly becomes a thing.
Yeah.
It's brilliant crack.
But it's a learning curve for both, you know, because like you're kind of helping their development. I mean, you see it all the time. Like, how impossible is it to write for not your own instrument? You know, the quirks of things that you only know the wee idiosyncrasies if you play that instrument all the time. For them, that insight you have is invaluable too, you know.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. I know, great things happen after 6 pints sometimes.
It really does, yeah. I'm telling you, yeah.
So tell me about what's keeping you busy in Cologne. I know you're teaching in a couple of different places. And...
Yeah, teaching's quite heavy at the minute. So I got a new job with, there's a music academy over there called the GF Handel Music Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching with them. And they work in the St. George's British International School. It's a big fancy British school over there. So I'm teaching a lot of their flute, and ABRSM is the system they use. So I'll do anything on woodwind up to grade 5 as well. Because that was a teaching module thing I did and as part of my bachelor. Do a lot of music theory teaching, and then run a lot of clubs and stuff. But that's like 2 days a week.
Okay.
I've got my own private class, which is quite extensive. Auditions are the main thing I've been doing a lot of recently. I've got 2 at the minute, which I'm waiting for results on. So fingers crossed for those. What else have I been doing? I was working with a video game company last week. That was pretty cool.
Recording some music for it.
Some music for them. It was it's a video game company that developed games to help children with sensory issues, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, again, I met this guy in the pub on St. Patrick's Night, of all nights. Mm-hmm. And he heard I was a musician. He's like, oh, you know, we're developing this game and the game's going really well, but we're using stock sounds for a lot of it. And it was his like pet project to go and replace the stock sounds with live music.
Mm-hmm.
So I got working with him and we recorded a few things and that'll be coming out soon. Which is great. I love doing that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working with a film student at the film school, a friend of mine from the GA Hair Club, who had just mentioned that he needed a riff put down on his film score. And I went along and then we ended up just writing the entire score together, just like letting it happen. And that was that's like a Lebanese film that's coming out soon, a short film, like 10 minutes. So
I've
been working on that a lot recently, which was a lot of fun. And yeah, just whatever I can get my hands on. So now the corona's over, I'm just taking whatever comes my way.
Yeah. Embracing it.
Everything. The next big thing was just before Corona, I had a very small tour planned because it was the 250th anniversary of Beethoven's birth. Yeah, birth, 1770. Yeah, birth. And I had spoke with some people because he was born in Bonn, which is just south of Cologne.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an Irish society down there, through the GAA club I found this, an Irish society down there, and I had worked out a programme to do Beethoven wrote some like pieces for flute and piano on Irish themes as part of a collection of Scottish music. So I was going to do them with flute and piano and do a recital built around that and take it on a small tour around the region. So I was going to do like a gig in Bonn and Hamburg, Cologne and Dusseldorf, I think it was. And that had all been organised just before Corona. And obviously the shame of doing it now is it's 252 years. It's not quite got the same ring. But we're starting that up again. So I had a pianist friend from Paris, a Brazilian guy, who was going to do that with me. So that's coming back up soon.
Great.
That'll be another fun programme to do.
I mean, it's never a bad time to play Beethoven. So.
No, it's not my favourite composer, so I'm always delighted.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, those pieces you've written on the Irish thing are...
I know, they're not the best. I played them a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Thank you. And it was fun. Like, I enjoyed getting to play Beethoven.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not maybe the...
Yeah. I think you're shy, but... It's still a lot of fun to do it. And we built a really cool programme around it. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, they were the centrepiece of it. I think we'd scheduled in Hamilton Hardy's in Ireland as well, because I had a nice connection. We put in a Brazilian piece, because he was Brazilian, a short Brazilian piece.
What was that?
Oh, it was a song. It was a Brazilian song he had arranged himself for flute and piano. But, yeah, that we'd schedule that and sort of built the programme around, like, you know, Beethoven, but also the fact that he's from Brazil and from Ireland and moving around. And I think we had planned, we wanted to do one big sonata at the heart of it. My favourite sonata is always the César Franck violin sonata on flute. And we'd sort of looked at it and we thought, well, he was in Paris and he was involved in the Ecole Normale where we both studied, so that would be a good one. So we're looking at maybe doing that.
Yeah.
And then finishing the programme off that. We got very close to starting it all and then it just fell apart. So
Sounds good.
The next big one.
It'd be really nice if you could take that here as well and potentially to Brazil.
Yeah, that would be the big plan. Coming to Ireland would be a lot of fun. I haven't done a gig in Belfast in God knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
I just fell out of this. I never really was in the music scene here, to be totally honest, because as I said, I didn't do like Ulster Youth Orchestra or any of that kind of stuff. So I never really felt like I was in that scene. Then Ross and Jake, my cousins, came along after and they were so into it. And I just felt like I missed the boat on that when I was at that age, you know, the formative years.
Okay, it's a tricky thing because we don't have a conservatoire here that, you know, a lot of musicians naturally go away to study if they want to be performers. And not everybody can find a way back.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the answer to that is yet. To be fair, I've seen plenty of players come back and I think I just need to make a bit more of an effort with it, to be totally honest. Because I work really hard to try and get work in Paris and Germany and I don't put the same effort into coming back here because, I don't know, I think in my head the music scene is not as good as it's a lot better than I remember it being. I think in the last 10 years, especially in Belfast, it's incredible what's happened here with the music scene. But there's something in my brain that just makes me think, oh, you can't bring that to Belfast, no one will go to that.
Yeah.
And then in the wood, these days the wood.
The wood. Your programme sounds awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And so, because I can't help being a wee bit nerdy and asking about what flutes you play on and things like that, can you tell me about your instruments?
I love my flute. I'm a very, very lucky boy. I play on a Sankyo 5K, 5-carat gold. Yeah, I came across it in Paris, actually. A Russian guy came into school one day and very dodgy, spoke like very broken French, and just said he was selling gold flutes if you wanted to buy one off him, and cash only, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, is this real? And yeah, it was, I think he sold it to me for 9,000, but was only cash. And I found out later that's because if you do bank transfers in France for precious metals, you have to pay tax on them. So because it was 5-carat gold, he wanted it in cash, but went and bought it off him. And then the first thing I did was rang Sankey and give them the ID number. I was like, are you sure this isn't stolen or bent or fallen off the back of a lorry? But no, it was all legit. It was just like one of his students in Russia played it. They got it for like a 7-year-old or something. He didn't want it, obviously. And it came to me. So I love it. It's my, I wouldn't say it's my dream instrument. If I had more money, I would love to go for a Brandon Cooper. I'm mad for them. But Sankey 5-carat, brilliant. Inline G, which I love.
Lovely.
I love going back to the inline G. C foot joint. I'm a big fan of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I borrow a B foot joint off a teacher or something if I have to play something that needs it. But I love playing on a C foot joint. No split E, none of that stuff. And I love it. It's just a very clean instrument.
Lovely.
Lovely sound. Yeah, I'm mad for my instrument. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think before I played on a MSL one, I bought head joints here and there and tried different things. And it was just nice to go back to a clean, simple instrument and just think, right, it's fine. It'll do its job and I'm going to work on top of it. And it's beautiful. Mad for it.
That's great. You feel like it suits you.
Totally. As I said, my dream instrument is definitely a Brannan, like a 14K Brannan.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the orchestral models. A couple of my teachers have played on them in Paris. They're very popular in Paris. Maggie played on one and I played it once and thought that is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But I did ring up Brannan just to ask them, because they don't put the price with the fluctuation of gold. They don't put the price always on their website. And I rang them up and I can't remember what they quoted me, but whatever it was, but it's a little bit out of my budget at the moment. Yeah, I think it was in and around $50,000 and thought, not quite. But one day, maybe. One day.
Cool. And you said that you did play on Irish flute. Like, do you have an Irish flute as well?
At the minute, I don't. I've borrowed one off a friend of mine, a French girl actually in Cologne. She is a beautiful, I don't even know what the make is.
Mm-hmm.
But I borrow hers when I want to do stuff on that. For the whistles, I had a couple of nice ones. I have a beautiful low whistle. I don't know who makes it though. I got it as a gift a few years ago. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
For the smaller ones, I actually ended up buying like one of those American ones because I was doing like a musical theatre thing a few years ago and it worked great because it's so like loud.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Sesato, is that the brand? It's like an American, like it's a polymer blend plastic thing. But it was great because when I was doing the pubs and clubs in Cardiff, a lot of the time they wouldn't have microphones.
Yeah.
And when you're just playing a whistle, you want something really loud. No quality of tone whatsoever, just blast it. And then I have a couple of nicer ones, but I haven't really spent the money on them yet to go and enjoy something really good. I would love to one day, but we'll see where it goes with that.
So musically, like you're kind of on a journey, obviously, like you've taken auditions, you're waiting to hear. Is that kind of your main aspiration at the minute? Like if an orchestral job came in, would you be pretty happy with that? Yeah,
big time. And like any, like it sounds bad. Like people have asked me this recently, like, you know, would you rather play in a chamber orchestra, an opera orchestra? I'm like, anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whoever will take me.
Yeah.
I just want to play in an orchestra. I get so much joy from playing in an orchestra. And as said, I just whatever the repertoire is, I will learn to love it because I'll be doing it for a job and I'll be stuck into it. Anytime I've done it, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of negatives about orchestral playing, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been the goal. That's why, and I think maybe when I finally do get that job, then I'll assess if I want to change.
Sure.
But I feel like it's a personal challenge to finally get this. It's been something I've wanted to do for so long.
Yeah.
And it's within touching distance now, like with Robert and all. He's obviously very known for coaching students to get into orchestras. And it is a reasonable goal now. So the fact that it's just nearly there, I want to get that first. And then I'll maybe consider if I wanted to stay with it or do something different. But for the minute, orchestral plan is, that's the big one.
Great. Well, I hope you get it.
Thank you very much. Fingers crossed.
Cool. Well, I think I've learned a lot about you, Gareth. Thank you so much for talking openly to me about everything. And
you're very welcome. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's been really nice to get to know you better and to hear everything that you're up to. And it sounds great. And, you know, I think you're definitely doing things in your own way. And I think that's pretty cool. So
thank you. I think it is true sometimes. Yeah, it's definitely unique. We'll see what happens.